podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Hello and welcome back to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, and welcome back to the flagship show, ESSR Central. My name's Ross McLeod, returning to the hosting chair after John Isherwood did such a great job last week. Such a great job that my panellist this week was lobbying for him to take my job, David Hockney.
Yeah, listen, I never said he should take your job. All I said was, quote, it was a breath of fresh air to hear John in the hosting chair for once. That was all. I did not call you to be sacked because you've been a consistent part of Central for so long, and I'm really glad that I'm probably one of your most regularly scheduled panels on Central.
Nice. Crawling back, listeners. If you'd like to listen to the massive back catalogue, including a breath of fresh air, John Isherwood, and a stale as fuck, Ross McLeod, then you can listen to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet on iTunes, Spotify, and all good Android podcasting sites at Suplex Retweet, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. We are on it. Right, Great American Bash this past Sunday night. NXT back on the road again after the Battleground premium live event from Cedar Park, Texas, with the Great American Bash. Just going to run through the results of the show quite quickly. Nathan Fraser, Dragon Lee, and two of the most generic women's wrestlers WWE ever produced defeated the Metaphor in an 8-person tag team match on the pre-show. The Family, Tony D'Angelo and Stacks, defeating Gallus for the NXT Tag Team Championships. Roxanne Perez defeating Blair Davenport in a Weapons Wild match. Gable Steveson and Baron Corbin ending in a double countout. Dominic Mysterio defeating Wesley and Mustafa Ali to retain his NXT North American Championship. Tiffany Stratton defeating Thea Hale in a submissions match when Andre Chase threw in the towel. And Carmelo Hayes defeating Ilya Dragunov for the NXT to retain the NXT Championship. David, what were your thoughts on the event, and pick a match and we'll go through it?
I guess talking point coming out of it was Gable Steveson's debut performance, because, I mean, if there's ever a time for the crowd to cheer for Baron Corbin, it had to be this time. You know, like someone who is a legit Olympic hero, much like, you know, like, because WWE's never had Olympic heroes in the past before, but the crowd were just simply not having it. You know, they call him like Kurt Angle 2.0. Like, people are actually cheering for Corbin to get the win here. He was booed throughout the entire match. Gable, that is, not Corbin. And I mean, there really was no salvaging it. I think the double count out almost felt like an on the fly call a little bit. You know, just to sort of make, not to send the crowd home furious, but at the same time, you know, you can't please them with a double count out. So their backs were really against the wall here. But I think the what really saved the whole show, like following that debacle, was the Carmelo Hayes Ilya Dragunov match. Like, because, well, you know, we've seen
in a minute. We'll pick up on your points about Gable Corbin, because he has been signed to WWE for a while. He was part of the 2021 draft. He was drafted to Raw. He then didn't make an appearance. He then appeared at WrestleMania in 2022, attacking his namesake, Chad Gable, after the Raw Tag Team Championship match. He appeared with Kurt Angle at Kurt Angle's birthday celebration. Kurt Angle's birthday seemed like a bit of, hey, remember this guy? He's still here. A lot has been put on Gable, and David Campbell in one of the chats was saying about this should have been where the Kurt Angle style heel turn has happened, where it's, you know, you do not boo an Olympic gold medalist, and, you know, Kurt finds a gimmick that suits him and then eventually wins the crowd back over, sort of thing. But my thing there was, this was the Attitude Era. This was, you know, pre-internet dirt sheets. This was, you know, Kurt Angle wasn't, you know, drafted on the first episode of Sunday Night Heat. Kurt Angle wasn't, you know, brought to WrestleMania to, you know, take down the New Age Outlaws, Kurt Angle was allowed to develop in the background. And it seems to be that Kurt and Gable have taken to wrestling in different ways. Kurt Angle took to it like a duck to water. There was reports that WWE officials weren't happy with how quickly Gable Stevenson was adapting to WWE. And there wasn't this internet pressure where we know how much has been invested in Kurt Angle. And I also think, and the thing was, when Kurt Angle saying, you know, you do not boo an Olympic gold medalist, this was the Attitude Era when WWE were more, they were more open to changing things every week. You know, heel and face turns and shock tactic stuff was a big part of the Attitude Era. Whereas WWE now, when they've invested so much in someone, they're often quite hesitant to make that heel turn. And yeah, I don't think he's there yet in ring. I think they've maybe been forced to start putting him into feuds because they don't want people being like, right, you know, it's been 3 years since you signed him. And, you know, in fact, he was at SummerSlam as well. SummerSlam 2021. He came out and there was a big thing about him. You know, oh, please welcome the gold medalist, Gable Stevenson. So, yeah, I think there's a lot invested here. And I at the minute, and, you know, it's hard to tell, it's his first match, but I don't see a lot of payoff coming from this investment.
No, probably not. And I suppose they had him feud with Corbin to begin with, because, you know, Corbin's been a heel throughout his entire run. So, and I don't recall many a time where he was actually cheered, apart from once, maybe a live event in Paris, where I think he faced Rick Boogs, and he actually, that was filmed by a fan. And you could see how pleased he was with such a positive reaction. But on TV, you know, he's always the heelish character going through reinvention after reinvention, and he still gets booed just because he's a good heel character. So I guess they assume that by default, you know, they've got to cheer for like a gold medal Olympian against this guy who's been consistently hated ever since he signed for NXT like 10 years ago. But you're right, I think maybe the internet trolls probably played a factor a little bit. You know, there was all this investment in it and it just failed to materialize in like when they actually put him out there. Like it's just been very stop-start with him, and when the time came, you know, the spark had fizzled and nobody, I think everybody just lost interest in it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's save the, I know you were going to mention Carmelo Hayes, Ilya Dragunov. Let's save that for last. Let's go through the card. You mentioned stop start, Blair Davenport. The former B Priestley came in with a lot of fanfare. COVID preventing her coming over from NXT UK, then visa issues and some injury issues have led to a bit of a stop-start push for her. But I thought her Weapons Wild match with Roxanne Perez, who continually is on these takeovers, even if it's not in a women's title feud, and I think that does show the investment WWE have in her. I thought their Weapons Wild match was a really fun, quite brutal at times, back-and-forth match with Roxanne Perez getting the win.
Yeah, because it's good for Roxanne to, you know, keep her momentum going after, you know, losing the NXT women's title at WrestleMania TakeOver. But Blair Davenport's a little bit of an anomaly to me, because obviously the only time I've really seen her shine is in NXT UK, and she's not had that much exposure on NXT Florida since she was originally brought in as the part of the triple threat against Mandy Rose and Meiko Satomura. So I think this is her first proper feud on NXT Florida, but I think she still needs time to really sort of connect with the audience a little bit before, you know, much like Roxanne, you know, she's had time to build up that support, etc. But it seems to me like, you know, whenever they do a weapons themed match in NXT, doesn't matter if it's men or women, they always seem to pull out really, really clever spots, but it done in such a way that, you know, it keeps the brutality of it rather than being like a form of, you know, artistry, for example.
Yeah. I think here Roxanne Perez getting the win, important thing, because it bounces her back from the title loss. It keeps her keeps her fresh because she's never had a feud with Tiffany Stratton, so she can go back into the title picture. Blair Davenport, I do think, will be all right. They had her revealed as the sort of the mystery attacker woman, because, you know, there was so many injuries in the NXT women's division that they thought, well, let's make a storyline out of it. So there is that there, that there's so many people to come back, and they are, I'm not saying they're not on Blair Davenport's level, but, you know, they're certainly earlier in their careers than Blair Davenport. And I think it's a good few people for Blair Davenport to go through and keep her on TV, keep her in rivalries, keep her in feuds, and keep her ever present for when they eventually have a face champion. I think she'll be able to slot right in there as the sort of first contender. So, fun match, no complaints about it. Let's say, I'm not going to talk about the pre-show because it just looks like it's continuing the Heritage Cup feud. Dragon Lee, we'll talk about him a little bit after we talk about the North American Championship match. I would like to say, though, Leon and Feroz, the most generic of generic wrestlers. If you went to the default, you know, the presets on Create a Wrestler, you could have created two more interesting wrestlers than these two. I think it was just because Nathan and Dragon Lee needed a third and fourth to go up against the Metaphor, who, by the way, I absolutely love. But we're not going to go into the match. We're going to go to the NXT Tag Team Championship match. The family eventually winning the NXT Tag Team Championships. That's now three of the four of the NXT 2.0 team from the War Games match in 2021. Bron Breakker, Carmelo Hayes, and now Tony D'Angelo, all with titles. Grayson Waller, the odd one out, but he has had, you know, feuds with AJ Styles, pay-per-view promos with John Cena, and it looks like he could be in a feud or any segment this coming SummerSlam with a certain Dwayne The Rock Johnson. So I think he's doing not too badly. But the family, what's your reaction to them as NXT Tag Team Champions?
This is good for the, you know, the family, etc. You know, because Tony D and Stax, you know, did they not have like two dimes as well? But he got released for some reason. Like, I think those guys could have been like a properly good stable, you know, maybe to fill the gap that Toxic Attraction left. But I think it's just been a little bit stop-start with, you know, Tony obviously having to be out with injury a few times, Channing Stack still a bit of a, you know, hit or miss booking setup. But I think if they could just really capitalize on the whole Mafia Boss character with Tony D, they could be onto a winner here, and having them as tag champions is certainly a good way to start. You know, we have the Don, the mafia boss, and you've got his lackey, his right-hand man there to help him out. I think there's potential there that they could possibly bring in some, you know, some folks in NXT who haven't got, you know, a current direction. Maybe they could bring them in as, like, mobsters of sorts. But maybe I'm just fantasy booking here. It's I think it's good booking for the D'Angelo family going forward. And nothing to take away from Gallus as well, because, you know, they've had a pretty solid run as tag champions, and, you know, it's good to see them, you know, be one of those few teams that have held the NXT UK and NXT tag team championships now. But it does make me wonder where Gallus goes from here now.
I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, the three of them, the two Coffees, and Wolfgang, and a trios feud against somebody, you know, I don't know, maybe against Schism. I don't know if they're going to do heel versus heel. Or trying to think who they could go up against, because NXT used to have loads of factions. They don't really have that anymore. I think, to your point about bringing more people into the family, I would like that idea. However, Tony D'Angelo, you know, he was one of the few people, and this is, let's talk about NXT 2.0, and let's talk about something that was so universally reviled. So universally despised, universally, you know, oh God, you can't change this. Oh, the rainbow colours and all, this is stupid. We want the black and gold brand back. And now look at it. Look at the stars it's created. Look at Bron Breakker's run. Look at Carmelo Hayes just now. Look at Grayson Waller on the main roster. Look at the, Jesus Christ. Look at the platform, easy for me to say, that's given Ilya Dragunov. Look at, you know, even some of the feuds that the outgoings like Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano had on the brand. Look at the fact that Gallus have been given that platform. Roxanne Perez has been given that platform. Wes Lee has been given a platform. Tiffany Stratton. A whole new range of characters that just needed time to find their feet. And now NXT is an enjoyable 2 hours where it's just, this is what happens. You need to watch this show week to week to know what's happening. You don't need to watch Raw and SmackDown. You don't need to do 5 hours. You don't need to do what AEW does, which is, you know, you need to watch the 3 shows on TV and the 2 internet shows, and then you need to know about New Japan and all that. It is...
And Ring of Honor.
Yeah, it's 2 hours. It's these characters. And never before has a move been so successful and actually so needed. When you listen to William Regal on Rene Piquet's podcast, he talks about NXT TakeOver Portland in 2020, the last takeover they did before the pandemic. There was a feeling backstage of, we've taken this as far as it can go. And NXT for a while, you know, I think we were programmed to, right, guy comes in, guy's a year here, guy wins the title, guy loses the title, guy gets a rematch, guy goes to Raw and SmackDown. And that was, so when people hung about, it just kind of felt stale. And now look at it, it's just an enjoyable 2 hours. It's allowed people like The Family and Gallus to get that that spotlight. But what I was, back to my original point, since I waffled on here, right at the start, if you added loads of these characters just into The Family, I think it would have worked. But The Family have slowly turned face through fan support. And now it's just the two of them. And if you try to, you know, put a square peg in a round hole here, it's not going to work. It's going to be a case that, no, you're ruining what we have here with D'Angelo and Stack. So I'm not against more people being added to The Family, but I want it to be the right people. Speaking of
it's got to be the right people. Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of the right people, the most over heel in wrestling, and I don't care who disagrees, Dirty Dominic Mysterio defeating Wesley and Mustafa Ali in a fun 12-minute triple threat match for the NXT North American Championships. There was your usual Judgment Day shenanigans with Rhea Ripley getting involved, a brutal riptide to Wesley through the table because he dared defy her, and Dominic Mysterio retaining that title. I put the clip in into the chat, David, of Dominic and Rhea blanking Shawn Michaels before Shawn Michaels says, your daddy should have spanked you more. I don't know what else I can say about these two other than just, I think they're sensational. They are great. Like, the Judgment Day is good, but the two of them together are just great.
Like, the two of them would be successful as a duo. You know, the Judgment Day, Priest and Balor, is just, you know, bonus extras at this point. Because the real story of Judgment Day is Rhea and Dom. And because I've said on past shows, you know, their chemistry together is undeniable. And, you know, they've just got this weird, like, I want to say like a, you know, a funnily enough, a Dom-Sub relationship, although it's ironically the other way around. It's, you know, she's the one controlling him practically, you know, and, you know, whatever Mammy wants, Mammy gets, that kind of thing. And she's always there to lend a helping hand, you know, despite, you know, like, I think there's been talks of, you know, Rhea should get, like, rumors online saying Rhea should get involved with the men's division and stuff, because she can clearly take on any of these guys in a fight. You know, like, even physically getting involved, you know, she's, I think she's took out the OC single-handedly in the past. She's obviously done it to Wes Lee, to Akira Tozawa, you know, most of the 24/7 title competitors and stuff. Like, she goes to show, you know, she can hang with anybody. It almost feels like a male-male partnership a little bit, but in this case, gender isn't an issue. You know, you've just got two great performers who bounce off brilliantly with each other, and Dom just continues to rile people up as a nuclear heat magnet, all because, you know, he turned against Rey Mysterio last year at Clash of the Castle, and people still hate him for it. It's like, as much as I don't want it to end, I know at some point it will end, but I'm just going to enjoy it for what it's worth.
Yeah, I think David Campbell said last week on this show, there's no such thing as go away heat. There are far too many people that want to be the cool heel and, you know, put out a funny line or a quirky joke here. Dominic and the Judgment Day aren't like that. They're happy to be arseholes. And, you know, the entire group benefit from the fact that, you know, they turned on and they took out two of the most beloved superstars in WWE history. You know, Edge has, you know, Edge, great as a heel, but he has that whole, you know, recovery story and the fact that so many people wanted to see him wrestle in the current era against certain wrestlers. And then Rey Mysterio speaks for himself. The whole group benefit from that, and they don't try to be anything other than despicable heels. What I will say here is I was quite surprised that the amount of offense Mustafa Ali was given. It looks like the Dom Ali story is not quite done yet. But Wesley being the one to take the pin?
Maybe they want to move past. Wesley now is NXT North American champion, but I fear if he gets called up to the main roster, I reckon there is potential for him to be lost in the shuffle. Unless he finds a way to truly stand out, I think he'd be in danger of getting lost. But at the same time, you know, Ali has kind of lost a lot of steam over the past few years, and he could also benefit with a challenge for the NXT North American title. You know, because we said before our predictions for the draft, you know, who would benefit from a move back to NXT? I don't think any of us put Mustafa Ali down there. You know, we were saying Madcap and Emma. We were saying, you know, Shotzi. And I think the OC were brought up at one point as well. But I want Ali to be successful, but I don't want it to be at the expense of someone as accomplished as Wesley has been as a singles guy.
I think Wesley now, and, you know, one of the other stories we have is that NXT's next premium live event will be the return of No Mercy. No Mercy, staple for many, many years. I'm glad NXT are using these names. You know, if you're not going to use them in the main roster, we're going to use them here. And I know people still love the takeover thing, but I like that, you know, like that was kind of like In Your House. It lasted for a while. But, you know, sooner or later, WWE dropped the In Your House from things. NXT dropped TakeOver. You know, just it comes and goes, these things. NXT No Mercy, taking place on the 30th of September from Bakersfield, California. I wouldn't be surprised if Wes Lee takes on Carmelo Hayes, because they made such a big thing about his reign, about how he had... In NXT history, he has the most title defences in a month. He has the most title defences of any North American champion. He had the most title defences of any male superstar in the past, I think it was 3 years. In NXT, they were saying 242 days, you know, a guy who basically took on all comers, and it's a case of what's next. And yeah, I think if Nash Carter was still here, him and Wesley going up as the MSK would be fine, but he's back in Impact Wrestling as part of the Rascals with Trey Miguel now. So I think him against Carmelo Hayes could be a great match, but I don't think he's quite done with Ilya Dragunov yet. Hey, an entertaining triple threat, I wouldn't mind seeing that. Let's talk about someone else who's not quite done someone else who could be coming in to the NXT North American title picture, and that's Dragon Lee. Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley were walking backstage when they see Dragon Lee. They make jokes about him looking like his dad, a second-rate Rey Mysterio, and he says, you know, Rey Mysterio's a legend, I'd be proud to be like him. You'll know exactly who I am soon. There was a funny line there. I say them not saying funny lines. Rhea Ripley did let the mask slip, and she went, He goes, "You'll know who I am." She goes, "You're Batman." And,
yeah.
That just absolutely floored me. But, sorry, you go.
No, I agree. Yeah, the Batman line just had me floored as well.
So it looks like Dragon Lee entering into the North American title scene. There was a story a few weeks ago about how WWE sees the Judgment Day as the natural successor to the Bloodline storyline. And listen, I wouldn't mind if the guys appear on all three shows for a while. I absolutely love it. But yeah, Dominic Mysterio retaining the NXT North American Championship. I'm just going to quickly talk about this one. Tiffany Stratton, Thea Hale, submission match. Andre Chase throws in the towel. Thea Hale, I hate. I'm sorry. I know people like Chase Yu. I like Andre Chase. I think Chase Yu's funny. I hate her. She's so wooden. I think she's went to the Natalia School of Acting. She's absolutely terrible, and I don't think she's that great in the ring. Tiffany Stratton, though, what a bitch. And that's a compliment. She plays it. She plays it beautifully. She is a great NXT Women's Champion, and I would like her to move on from Thea Hale now and go into a feud with Roxanne Perez.
Oh, yeah, completely agree. Like, Tiffany Stratton, I wasn't a huge fan of to begin with, because I wasn't, you know, the whole daddy's girl sort of gimmick wasn't really my cup of tea. But what she's done over the last few months in the ring, completely knocked out the park. That moonsault, by the way, is a thing of beauty. Like, probably the best moonsault in the game ever since. Ooh, who does a really good... Like, Kurt Angle did a really good moonsault. It was just so flawless through the air. But, yeah, this one takes the biscuit, I think. But you're right about Thea Hale. You know, it's not... it reminds me of, you know, those really corny high school bands, I think, you know, that they cheer someone up during a pep rally before a big game. And it's some of the cheesiest high school musical shite you've ever seen and stuff. But I mean, I get it. Chase Yu is funny. Don't get me wrong. I just never was invested in them as, you know, glass ceiling shattering ring competitors, as it were. And you were talking about the Natalia School of Acting a little bit. I do remember, I think you also mentioned, there was a similar comment you mentioned about Dana Brooke, and she had a kendo stick match with somebody recently, and it was impressive to see, you know, like, that you said that Dana Brooke was more wooden than the kendo stick itself. Like, I think that roughly fits the Thea Hale character a little bit from my perspective. But the throwing in the towel, though, was a pretty interesting twist, you know, given that Chase Yu's hyping her up to not tap out, and yet they're the ones who basically did it for her.
Yeah, you saw a lot of the stuff. It was Duke Hudson that was hyping her up, but Andre Chase is meant to be like the dean of the university. I think it's maybe just to keep the face as a face. WWE don't really... It's weird seeing the Attitude Era, like The Rock tapped out, Undertaker tapped out, Kane tapped out a couple of times.
Did Undertaker tap out?
Yep. Tapped out Kurt Angle. Got a lot of people over, and it got submission moves over, the fact that it had made people tap out. But they seem to have this thing now where, like, you know, faces will pass out, not tap out. And, you know, people will throw in the towel for them. So, yeah, just look, not a fan of this match. I like Tiffany Stratton, but I don't think she's ready to hold a feud up on her own. Like, hold a match up on her own. And she kind of had to do that with Thea Hale. Not invested in the Thea Hale character. And as you said about Chase Yu, they're never going to shatter a glass ceiling. They do have a ceiling. And I think the time to maybe cash in on that popularity was WrestleMania, the Fatal 4-Way for the tag titles. It would have been night. No, in fact, they weren't even in that. So,
no, they weren't.
The Fatal 4-Way for the tag titles. And I think they maybe should have won then before maybe losing them back quite quickly. Just, you know, well done for getting over. Here's the tag titles, but obviously we don't want you as champions for a long time. Let's talk the main event then. Carmelo Hayes, Ilya Dragunov, singles match for the NXT Championship. 25 minutes this went. It flew by. a brutal match. Ilya Dragunov putting Carmelo Hayes through the ringer. Couple of times I thought Dragunov had it. You know, this has been the first time I've really been invested in Hayes as champion, because I think it was kind of well known he was winning WrestleMania weekend. I think Battleground, you knew he wasn't going to lose to Bron Breakker. I don't think anyone thought Corbin was going to win, although that would have been cool. I'd like to have seen him as champion. But this was the first time there was the real, oh, Jesus, like, you thought he was going to lose. And it was only after Dragunov put him through the ringer and Hayes threw everything at him that he managed to retain the title. So I really enjoyed this match.
There are some amazing spots in this match. I think the one that stood out in particular was, I think Dragunov was going for like a springboard move. Carmelo reverses it in midair into like a sort of codebreaker type move. And literally Ilya, with selling of the night, you know, he literally flies up a la like Matt Stryker at Mania 23 when RVD hits the monkey flip on him. He's like in the air for a good second and a half, and it looked like he was just floating for a minute. But Dragunov, I don't think he ever has a bad match, you know, because he always screams intensity and he adds that little extra layer of aggression that I don't think a lot of people can offer. You know, we've seen him perform live in ICW against like Joe Coffey, who is a pretty hard-hitting guy in his own right. And we also did, I think you also discussed the last man standing match he had with Dijak at Battleground. You know, like these guys like over-delivered when it came to, you know, brutal spots. And Dragunov is obviously a big factor in that. I mean, he was the one to defeat Gunther for the NXT UK Championship Reign of Terror. So I think either way, you knew you were going to get a good match out of it, but I think it was a little bit predictable in that I think Carmelo was likely to retain. But, you know, like you said, you know, there were a few near false finishes that you thought Dragunov might just have this. And when you pair it up, you know, with some really excellent spots throughout that makes you question, you know, who the winner could really be, that's how you know you've got an excellent match on your hands.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really enjoyed the match. Carmelo Hayes still champion. No complaints there. And we move on to NXT No Mercy. So this coming weekend, SummerSlam back in Detroit, Michigan at Fort Field, famous for hosting WrestleMania 23, this Saturday, August the 5th. Me and Scott talked about a lot of the card 2 weeks ago. Gary, John and David Campbell spoke about a lot of it last week. So we're just going to talk about some of the new stuff that's came out in the past week or so. An MMA stipulation added to Ronda and Shayna's match. MMA style rules, because if there's something that works within the realms of pro wrestling, it's legitimate sports, David.
Yeah, legitimate fighting. Yeah. Although I imagine I don't watch MMA regularly, but is it like rounds, I suppose? Like, do you win by, you know, TKO or submission only? I don't imagine it's pinfall that happens, but
it just says MMA rules match.
Right. Yeah, they need to like give a bit more context to those, you know, those people that don't watch MMA on the fly. But what I did pick up from this week's Raw was a very good two-part interview.
As an MMA, pinfalls are not a valid method of victory. Match can typically only be won by knockout, submission, disqualification, forfeit, or going to a referee's decision. Right, so I think you're going to see Shayna choke her out, and that'll be Ronda's goodbye.
That sounds the most likely scenario, especially as, you know, Ronda's contract with WWE is up following this weekend, because she signed a five-year deal and then some. From 2018 onwards, I think it was like a 5.5-year deal from the Royal Rumble to SummerSlam 23. But
yeah,
she was away for like almost 3 years as well, where she obviously off with pregnancy, she had to get her finger sewed back on from a horrific injury, and yeah, it's almost been like a tale of two stories with Ronda Rousey a little bit.
Yeah, it's she was an infectious, fun wrestling fan who could, you know, who when the bell rang could knock people out. And the worst thing she did for her career was that interview where she slated the entire women's division, because then the crowd turned on her, so then they turned her heel going into the WrestleMania main event at WrestleMania 35. And then when she came back, it was just no one cared. Her promos hadn't improved. And yeah, she was thrown into a feud with Charlotte that felt like it was never ending. She certainly wasn't helped with feuds with Liv Morgan and Shotzi Blackheart. And then she just sort of lost the title on a random episode of SmackDown to Charlotte Flair, and then just kind of won the tag titles on a random episode of Raw. So, yeah, as you said, tale of two stories, you know, best of luck to her, you know, whatever she does next. But WWE round two has not been great. Let's talk about the Battle Royal that's been added, though. SummerSlam Battle Royal, a to-be-confirmed man Battle Royal. So far confirmed for participants, easy for me to say, as of August 1st, LA Knight, Sheamus, Tommaso Ciampa, Shinsuke Nakamura, Otis, and Chad Gable. I like a good Royal Rumble on these big shows. You know, get a lot of big guys who maybe aren't on the card, further some storylines for some TV feuds, and then get a big pop for the crowd for, you know, when a big face wins. And maybe I'm just being hopeful here, David, but I think this is to make up for the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and I think there's only one person whose game this is, and it's L.A. Knight. Yeah.
No, I completely agree, yeah. I think it does feel like a substitute for the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and for why L.A. Knight didn't win that United States Championship Eliminator tournament is beyond me. Because it was practically handed to him on a plate, the fact that he was getting massively over with the crowd. Austin Theory has done sweet fuck all since WrestleMania, you know, in that very underwhelming program with John Cena. And I think if you have to make the United States Championship seem more electric again, you know, you give it to a guy who's going to basically carry the crowd in the palm of his hand, and LA Knight is the perfect candidate for that. But are they going to get anything out of this battle royal? You know, it's like maybe it'll put the number one contendership for the US title on the winner. I mean, it makes sense, but, you know, Theory's still got to have his match against Santos Escobar for the title. I don't know if that's not been scheduled for SummerSlam as of yet, but it sounds like they need a program. They need a program after the show, which is why the card seems a bit light with just a week to go.
I don't think this is going to like lead to anything straight away. However, I think this is just a spotlight for, you know, guys like Nakamura, Sheamus, Ciampa, Otis and Gable, and it's to get LA Knight a big pop and a big victory. Yeah, no pun intended. I don't see there being a stipulation. I just see this being a SummerSlam Battle Royal. Let's talk about light up
the crowd by giving a popular guy a big win. I think that's the purpose of it.
Yeah, I think, and we'll talk about two matches that won't be on the show in a little minute, but I think if a US title match is added, I think this match will be the pre-show, and it'll just be to get the crowd going sort of thing. Let's talk about Tribal Combat for the Undisputed WWE Universal Championship and recognition of Tribal Chief, easy for me to say again, Roman Reigns, Jey Uso. David, you don't believe. David Campbell's starting to believe. Scott McLeod's starting to believe. Roman Reigns is not advertised for the next two pay-per-views, Payback 2nd of September in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Fastlane 7th of October in Indianapolis, Indiana. No Roman at the next two pay-per-views. Could this be it? Do you believe in miracles? Do you believe in fairy tales?
I do believe in fairy tales. I do believe in miracles. I just don't see it happening here. Like, think about it. Drew McIntyre was originally advertised for Money in the Bank. He got dropped because they thought, right, that's it, his contract's up. He shows up anyway, like, you know, to confront Gunther. So not advertising someone, I should say, I think that's a bit of a curveball to have you second guess yourselves. because we've seen Roman and Jay go at it in the past. And what sold those matches, I think, was purely storyline aspect. You know, they had the match at Night of Champions 2020. They immediately followed by the I Quit Hell in a Cell match, which I think should have main evented over Orton and Drew that year. But I digress. It's the storytelling that's going to sell this. You know, if Tribal Combat means anything goes, no disqualifications, it's going to be a full-on beatdown of Jey Uso, I reckon. Like, to the point where no family members, no one of Samoan heritage can interfere. It's going to be a sheer beatdown for all those months and years of animosity, of unspoken animosity between the two after Jey fell in line the first time. It's going to be heartbreaking to watch, I think, but the Usos need new direction. It puts a full stop on Roman versus Jey. And then Roman doesn't have necessarily have to be at Payback. He could appear at Fastlane. He probably will appear at Survivor Series. But he can afford to miss at least one pay-per-view, as he has done, you know, in the past. But I don't see anything other than a Roman Reigns win here. But with peak drama, peak storytelling, and probably a few tears as well.
No, I think it's happening. I think it's happening, my friend.
We said the same with Drew McIntyre at Clash at the Castle last year, and it didn't happen. How do you expect it to happen with Jey Uso, who has effectively been a tag team wrestler for 90% of his career?
Right, but it doesn't matter that he's been a tag team wrestler for 90% of his career. John Bradshaw Layfield was a tag team wrestler for all of his career. And went on a...
He reinvented his character. This is still the same Jey Uso.
This isn't the same Jey. This is... We have developed from unspoken Usos teaming with Tamina to face-painting Haka, you say Us, I say oh, good time Usos, to the Uso Penitentiary, to the Bloodline, to the scorned and shunned member of the tribe. This is a different Jey Uso, and he has a massive groundswell of support from the crowd. You look at every segment they have. You know, there's so often in wrestling, especially nowadays, not a clear direction about who's the heel and who's the face, because the crowd cheers who they want. They hate Roman, they love Jey. Jey, at the moment, you look at the pop, and this is worldwide, David, you look at the pop at Saudi Arabia, where him and Jimmy turned on Roman and Solo. You look at the pop when he said, I'm out, in the US, and he kicked Roman in the face. You look at the pop in the UK, where Jey Uso was the first person in 3 years to pin Roman Reigns. This has gone worldwide, and this is going universal, and it's Jey Uso that's going to be holding the Universal Championship at the end of SummerSlam. I guarantee it.
Boy, are you going to look silly when if Roman walks out still the champion.
No, I believe in miracles.
Tell you what, if Jey Uso does win it, he will have more than earned it. Okay? No denying it. My gut tells me it's just not happening. I can't see it.
I don't see it being a long run. I see Jey Uso defending the title at the two pay-per-views Roman is not advertised for. I then see a Survivor Series rematch where Roman takes back his title, his now singular title, by the way, because I think at the end of this reign, the Universal title is gone, and it's that new WWE title that we have going forward.
The gold one.
Yeah, the gold one. So.
Aye.
I think this is it for the Universal title. I think Jey Uso will be the final Universal champion, and I think he'll hold the WWE championship till about Survivor Series. And I do think Roman's storyline is Cody, But I don't think, you know, Roman holding the title for another year and then Cody beating him is the answer. I think this has been a story well worth telling, and I think the ending, you didn't need to give Sami Zayn the title. I don't care what anyone says.
No, I agree,
Because Sami Zayn's victory was the Usos. You know, Jimmy and Jay, you know, they followed Roman's command and they turned on him at the first sight, which was what Kevin Owens said. I think you didn't need to give Cody the title then, although I know Gary Kernahan disagrees.
No, I'm with Gary on that. Like, Cody should have won it at Mania. Like, they could still have gone through down the path of who will be the new tribal chief under tribal combat. You know, it's like in Black Panther, you know, you have Killmonger versus T'Challa, you know, for the accolade of who becomes the Black Panther. That is what this reminds me of a little bit. It doesn't need the championship.
I think the championship just adds to it. And let me tell you this. The Cody Rhodes storyline with Dominic Mysterio, a fun stopgap for about 3 or 4 weeks. The Cody Rhodes storyline with Brock Lesnar, which has been great, I think maybe stretched a bit too long, but, you know, we're coming to the end of that. It has been great. They didn't need the title. And, you know, Brock beating Cody in Saudi Arabia, that would have meant Brock Lesnar as champion again, which no one wants to see. We would have essentially just taken the title off Roman for then him to drop it back to Brock Lesnar. And that's not needed. I think here, this storyline has been so compelling because the storyline was, you let us down by losing your titles. And Jay's response is, I'm going to take your titles. And I think it needed the title. I don't think this storyline survives on simply the tribal chief aspect, even though that has been a fun, you know, side part. I think this is personal, and Jay never wanted the title. You know, you saw that in the promo where he's like, I've got to get you and I've got to take your title now. It's as simple as that, because if he wanted his title, he would have asked for it at Money in the Bank. It wouldn't have been, you know, it wouldn't have been tribal warfare. It wouldn't have been him and Solo versus the Usos. It'd have been straight up Jay versus Roman. That was a chapter that was necessary to get to this title match, and I think it has been absolutely superbly done. But
it's been superbly done, that's for sure. It's just I think the booking of this is going to be crucial going forward.
I think Roman wins the title back before the new year. I think probably Survivor Series, and I think we do Cody Roman again. But yeah, and
it has to be Cody Roman again, but the reign has to continue until then. Because at WrestleMania, it'll be much more impactful. And then Cody finally finishes the story that he should have finished a year ago.
Cody can still finish a story, but he's going through hard times like his dad just now. And he was someone who never held the title for long. He was only given the title because his popularity demanded it. And when you look at the popularity of Jey Uso right now, his popularity demands it. And even if it's just a short 3-month title run and Roman wins it back, Cody Rhodes' story is not dethroning the record-breaking reign of Roman. Cody Rhodes' story is bringing the WWE Championship into the Rhodes family, something Dusty and something Dustin was never able to do. So I still think you can do it here. But anyway, we could book Roman Reigns' title run and the eventual end all night. We'll move on from that. Let's talk Superstar Spectacle, the show everyone wants, returning to India Friday, the 8th of September. The weirdest thing about this is the poster advertising mega superstars like Roman Reigns, Drew McIntyre, and Odyssey Jones.
Odyssey Jones, be Christ. I still remember when I said he was a waste of a TV draft pick.
Yeah, I agree.
Has he appeared on Raw since he was announced as a draft pick for Raw?
I don't think so.
Has he?
I think he's been in a battle royal. I think he was in the battle royal that Ali won to go to. Oh. But yeah, like a lot of people made their one and only like TV appearance then and there.
Jeez, oh. Yeah, I've got the poster up there just now. I mean, why is Natalia on there?
No clue.
Yeah.
But aye, Superstar Spectacle, yeah, we sound enthusiastic about it.
I see you looking in the background, there's Shanky as well.
Aye, no, I can understand Shanky and Jinder. Oh, yeah.
I've not seen Shanky in God knows how long.
Yeah, I can understand Indushare and all that, and you know, all that stuff, but my God. So yeah, you've got Shanky, Indushare, and Jinder Mahal as your Indian representation. You've got Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins, Gunther, Ludwig Kaiser, Natalya, and Becky Lynch. That's probably why she's on the car thing, just more women on it. Riddle, Rhea Ripley, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and oh, there's one I didn't notice. Doing a backflip on the poster, Bron Breakker. Didn't notice that. But yeah, it's Odyssey Jones.
I saw that.
Odyssey Jones, one of these things just doesn't belong here. One of these things isn't the same. Let's move on from that. Impact Wrestling are coming back to the UK, announcing a tour this coming October. They'll be in Glasgow on the 26th of October, Newcastle on the 27th of October, and Coventry on the 28th of October. Tickets go on sale August the 4th. Great to see Impact back in the UK. I went to one of their house shows in the Brayhead Arena back in 2013, main evented by Aces and Eights members D'Lo Brown and Devon taking on Sting and Kurt Angle in a steel cage match. What a great night.
Mental. And I'm gutted as well because I'll be away for these Impact tapings as well. I'll be away on holiday. But see, when I saw that announcement, I thought, you know what? I think because this is the first Impact show they've done in, what, 10 years, is it? And rumour has it the tickets are being priced at like 35 to 40 quid. That would be a good night out. Like 26th of August, I believe that's a Saturday. No, it's a Thursday.
I thought it was a Thursday. Oh, gets.
Yeah, but I think in Glasgow, for just if we're talking, you know, because we're both Glaswegian. You know, it's going to be the O2 Academy, which ICW have done a few shows there. They've done Shug's Who's Party there before. So it does have the capacity to host a decent sized show. Obviously not like a Hydro or an SECC or even a Brayhead Arena, but you'll still get a strong, passionate wrestling crowd in a place like that. And with the amount of waves that Impact's been making, you know, with some of its big names, it has potential to be a big sellout.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it will sell out, definitely. Being smart with its locations, you know, WWE tend to just do like, you know, crowd it with Glasgow, Newcastle, Manchester, Liverpool, all right next to each other. And then London, you know, they're spacing them out, you know, Glasgow, Newcastle, Coventry. Coventry's got...
One of these things doesn't belong.
They have a big ice skating arena that the dreaded Five Star tried to run in. But I think Impact will be able to sell that out, definitely. There's not a lot of local promotions in Coventry. That's why Five Star went there. They try to like tap into that market. But I think Impact, obviously, a respected brand. You know you're going to get a good night out there. So I think they'll do very well in Coventry, Newcastle and Glasgow. Speaking of Impact, 4,400 pay-per-view buys for Slammiversary, not including streams on their YouTube channel where you can buy it through your Impact Plus subscribership. It's the highest pay-per-view buy for any Impact-related show since... Kenny Omega was champion, and that includes higher than any of their joint promotions with New Japan Pro Wrestling. So very good buys for Slammiversary, certainly for a company the size of Impact. And it looks like things are on the up going forward. So well done to Impact Wrestling. Let's jump over to AEW. David, it's the 1st of August today. We are officially in the month of All In when we go to London, taking place Sunday the 27th, I should say. Easy for me to say.
It's next.
Is it on the Saturday?
No, it's the Sunday. It's the 26th.
No, Sunday's the 27th. I'm looking at the calendar now.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at the wrong month.
We go on the 26th.
Sorry, I still had my calendar forward when I was searching, you know, when the Impact dates were. So, yeah, no, you're right. It's the 26th.
But we are officially in All In month. Some of the stories taking place just now. CM Punk revealed on Collision, what's in the bag? It was the real world championship with an X through it for Straight Edge. The X means Straight Edge, and Straight Edge means I'm better than you. CM Punk, the real world champion, and he's challenged Ricky Starks for the title next week on Collision.
Like, what the actual fuck? Like, where the hell has this come from? Could CM Punk not have done this literally the day he came back to AEW? Because then that would have made much, much more sense. Like, I get his feud with Ricky Starks. Obviously, Ricky Starks winning the Owen Hart Cup tournament, etc., beating him in the final. But why bring up, you know, the AEW title with a spray-painted X on it, a la Hulk Hogan drawing, you know, spray-painting NW on the WCW title? And then they set up a match for next week's Collision for the real title. You mean, well, MJF's off doing Better Than You Baby with Adam Cole. And yet they throw in special guest enforcer, special guest referee enforcer, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Like, busy week for Ricky. He was included in the Great American Bash promo, and now he's on AEW.
Oh, I mean, no, I know we joke about, you know, Tony Khan being a bit of a coke fiend and all, but holy shit, like, how many lines did he start when he came up with that decision?
I actually like this storyline. I don't think it's not unprecedented. You know, we had Sami Zayn do it during the pandemic when he had to take some time off. He came back as the real Intercontinental Champion, went on to win both belts.
Yeah, that was immediately after he came back as well. Yeah. You know, Punk didn't have this whole fiasco of going up against, you know, Aussie Open and Switchblade Jay White and stuff, etc. He goes to the Owen Hart tournament, you know, loses in the final, and now he decides to bring back, you know, the real world championship without even so much as a peep from MJF.
Oh, you're finished now. So CM Punk did return with the bag. We knew what was in the bag. We knew that there was rumours for months. He's only now just revealed it. And I think it was so, because immediately they made it clear this wasn't a brand split. There was just people who were on Collision, you know. There was other people that could cross over. There was other people that could do other stuff. MGF was on the third episode of Collision, and he actually defended the world championship on Collision. So I think it was to avoid that as well. We've had the Owen Hart tournament. Ricky Starks has been threatening to show what's in the bag, or saying, you know, come on, Punk, show us what's in the bag, because he knows there was an episode of Collision where there was a backstage promo with, I believe it was the second episode, where Punk, FTR, and Ricky Starks took on the Bullet Club. He shows Ricky Starks what's in there, and Ricky Starks just nods in approval. So the Real World Championship allows a continued World Championship feud, whilst at the same time, the very popular team of Better Than You Baby can still continue to, you know, have a run, you know, and it allows, kind of like, and here's my comparison here, when Tessa Blanchard refused to, you know, honour bookings with Impact, and she was the Impact World Champion, and they didn't have a World Champion at the time. Moose brought back the TNA Championship. Resurrected, that was what I was looking for. He brought back the TNA Championship and was recognised as the TNA World Champion. And he was calling himself, you know, the real world champion of wrestling, and, you know, defending that title against anyone that asked for it. So I like the idea that Punk's brought this title back to then, you know, get into some feuds, possibly allow Better Than You Baby to do a tag match at All In while CM Punk has a world championship match. You still get the best of both. You get MJF with the title, you get the Better Than You Baby tag team, you get the potential heel turn, and then you have CM Punk defending the world title. The world title, which he never lost. So he is very, very within his rights to call himself the real world champion. But let's talk about Better Than You, Baby. A great match against FTR. Say again?
Yes, please.
A great match against FTR on Collision. FTR have been great since winning the AEW Tag Team Championships. Another absolute banger of a match. With FTR coming out the victors, the real story was MJF after the match putting over FTR, saying, you know, not Collision, the Pinnacle had more to go, and if I hadn't been so arrogant, we could have went further. We had a lot of steam left, and I'm glad to have teamed with you guys. So, yeah, MJF showing this better side of himself. It's sort of like KO and Jericho, this sort of team. We know the turn is going to come. We know the turn needs to happen. These guys can't team together forever. They're chalk and cheese. They are clearly using each other. Adam Cole still has designs on being the world champion. But while it lasts, it is fun. And this character development for MJF, only to turn back to being a prick, will break hearts a lot more than just, hey, let's team together, win the tag team tournament. Oh, we didn't win the titles. Bang.
Yeah, it's definitely getting, you know, best friends, KO and Jericho vibes. Getting sort of Team Hell No vibes, but, you know, they actually became a face tag team and just ran with it rather than, you know, oh, when's the implosion coming? When's the implosion coming? You know, this is, it's, Kevin Owens did a mega heel turn during the Festival of Friendship, and I think they're trying to do that at some point down the line, but I think people have gotten into this habit of, you know, they know it's going to happen, they know it's going to happen, and they think, oh, here it comes, oh wait, no, not yet, and I think they're just going to patiently bide their time, and they will strike when the iron's hot, possibly even set up a match for Wembley. Maybe they'll do the turn at Wembley as well. You know, maybe, hey, they could have MJF.
Do you listen when I speak?
What?
So do you listen when I speak? I literally just said everything you're saying.
Oh God, you're throwing me off here now.
No, I do get what you mean. Like the mega heel turn and the from Kevin Owens. But I don't think they need to strike when the iron's hot, if you get me. I think striking before the time is key, kind of like with the Shield, kind of like with the Festival of Friendship. It needs to be, I think Wembley's too obvious. I think if you do it before Wembley, it has to be now to allow build up. But if it's after Wembley, it needs to just be on a random episode of Dynamite or Collision, so you don't see it coming.
And it gives people a reason to tune in as well every single week, waiting for it to happen.
Let's talk about AEW's Dynamite. 200 episodes of AEW Dynamite this Wednesday from Tampa, Florida. A big show. Not literally. He's called Paul White now.
Well.
A big show lined up. An anything goes triple threat match. John Moxley, Trent Barretta, and Penta El Zero. The Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships on the line. Aussie Open taking on Vikingo and Commander. Chris Jericho and Takeshita will take on Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia. The AEW World Champion MJF will have a promo. Hikaru Shida will take on Tony Storm for the AEW Women's World Championship. Trios action when Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks take on Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, and Satnam Singh. And Jack Perry has a face-to-face with Jerry Lynn, because that's what we want to see in 2023. Jerry Lynn fighting for a title that's not registered.
Jesus. I mean, just when you think AEW struck gold, you know, they surround it with random shit. It's just, it baffles me sometimes what goes through Tony Khan's mind. Aside from, you know, the perfectly fine white powder that is allegedly happening.
Yeah, I do think this is a good show, though. I think that's one of, you know, maybe I'm being a bit harsh here, but it is, you know, we mentioned MJF not there with Adam Cole. If the turn's happening, it will happen now, you know. It's Dynamite 200. The breakdown of the Jericho Appreciation Society, although not much build, Aussie Open versus Vikingo and Commander will be a great match. The Hikaru Shida. Great to see her back in the title picture, because I think she is, her and Britt Baker certainly carried the women's division in the early parts of AEW's run. And yeah, it just seems at the minute that she was lost in the shuffle. So it's nice to see her back.
Yeah, it is nice to see her back. It's definitely one of the originators of the AEW women's division. Like, she's been one of the more consistent performers throughout. And, you know, she's been away for some time. Comes back to, you know, maybe create herself in a new image slightly every time. Always carries the kendo stick with her, so at least that's a consistent part of her. It's, if there was like a women's pillar of AEW, I think she'd definitely be one of them, for sure. And it's nice to see her back in the title scene as well, because she deserves, you know, more exposure as a champion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's going to do us for this episode of ESSR Central. A big week, so much more to talk about next week when we have the results of AEW 200, the results of SummerSlam, and so much more. Hopefully this time next week we'll be talking. We'll have a new WWE champion and a new tribal chief. I'm betting on it.
I'm not.
Okay, good to know. You want to listen to more of our back catalogue, you can find us Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet on Spotify, Android and iTunes, at Suplex Retweet, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you name it, we're on it. I'll be back next week. David will be here if I let him. See you later.
Hi, I'm Scott McLeod.
And I'm Grant McRobbie.
We are the hosts of the monthly show on Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet, East Meets West,
where we'll bring you all the latest happenings, reviews and big events from New Japan and the land of the Far East.
You can remember to check that out on the Eat Sleep Suplex Retreat podcast feed on all good Android podcasting sites like Anchor, Spotify or iTunes now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.